Accession number 13724, reel 4.
Captain Lowell, reel 4. You said you went across with the
money. I went across to France and moved up to Paris with them, then on to Luxembourg, and then on to Verdun on their air staff.
Why was it such a good job for you?
It was such an interesting job visiting their forward airfields and meeting such splendid chaps that they had in the 9th Air Force. One interesting fact that I'd like to cover: when I was liaison officer to the 9th Air Force at Sunning Hill Park, Ninth Air Force were equipped with Marauder B-26 aircraft, and the IAF had loaned them Spitfires 5s, because they were waiting for their Thunderbolt aircraft to get over here. But my general, General Candy by name, the American general, called me into his office one day, and he had a naval officer with him, and he said, "George, this is Commander so-and-so, I can't remember his name, but he's come here with a proposition from the Admiralty that the Marauders go in and bomb Rotterdam. Now, you've had experience in two group. What, in your opinion, do you consider the losses will be?" And I said, "In my opinion, your losses, how many are you going to send?" And I think he said the figure was 12 Marauders. And I said, "Your losses, at the very best, will be 90%. And this naval officer said, "Oh, you've got it all wrong. That won't happen." And I said, "Well, you come over here, Commander, to sell this proposition to the 9th Air Force. I've had experience in low-level attacks, and I assume you're prepared to go on the raid as you're so keen on it." And I think, to his credit, he went on the raid, but the losses were 100%. They lost a lot. And I think I'm right in saying that General Candy lost his command over that. But fortunately, when Army Co-op Command got on to me and said, "Why the hell did you let this raid or let it go forth?" And I explained that what I had said, and fortunately I insisted that the general gave me in writing that I had recommended the losses would be 90%, and the raid was none, in my opinion.
When was that?
I can't remember. It must have been, let me see, when are we now? I should say that was in about 1943.
What did you think of the American Air Force as compared with the RAF?
Well, I must say I'm prejudiced. I think the RAF are magnificent, were magnificent, and always will be magnificent. But I take off my hat to the Americans. They were brave, and they had a lot of guts. and they were fine pilots and air crew.
Why was it necessary to have a liaison officer from the RAF with the Americans?
It is a custom that you always have a liaison. You see, small things, when we gave them the Spitfires, they were having awful trouble with them. They were putting them on their nose and breaking the air screws. And I went down there flying the Spitfires with them at their base at Kivil, K-W-V-I-L. And the thing being was, the reason they were doing this, the American aircraft had their brakes on their feet, rather like a car. And with the Spitfire, you had the brakes on the control column. And they were applying the brakes through inexperience too harshly and putting the spits on their noses. And we had to liaise to, get little things like that remedied. And any extra spares they wanted, we could get them from the IAF. Not that they needed many, because they were jolly well equipped.
Can I just go back to your early operations in the war? Why do you think it was that you survived all those operations in the early days when so many of your brother pilots went down? Was it just luck, or just did you have any special techniques which you used?
No, it was purely luck. The more you did, your chances of survival were best. Most of the pilots who were killed were the inexperienced ones. Now, for example, I always ensured before I crossed the Dutch coast into Germany at night flying a Hamden, if possible, I sometimes might have waited 5 or 10 minutes for some other unfortunate to be coned by the searchlights. And when I say the searchlights, that would mean 20 or 30 searchlights coming up with the master blue. And if the master blue searchlight got you, you might as well say, well, this is it. But I used to wait. This was my personal technique of waiting until somebody was coned, and then putting my nose down and losing a few thousand feet, gaining airspeed, and going through the searchlights. They had this terrible belt of searchlights that stretched for about 40 miles, and that was your first hurdle. You had to get through those and the flak before you started your main run into Germany.
Why do you say it was fatal if the main blue...
Because the master searchlight, for some extraordinary reason, all the white searchlights, or the normal searchlights, used to seem to cone onto him, and he was terribly hard. You see, once you were coned by the searchlights, it was just like a moth flying up. You were absolutely blinded. You couldn't see a damn thing. And the only thing you could do, you dived, whatever you did, the blue always seemed to be able to hold you. It might have been psychological, but to me, the master searchlight, the blue one, or sort of blue in color, seemed to be better than the other ones. But the German searchlights and the German flak was absolutely outstanding. I mean, they would range, if you could smell the flak as it burst, which you could, the cordite or whatever it was they put in their shells, you know, if it was in front of you, you were in trouble. If it was behind you, you didn't worry quite so much.
You told me earlier that you always had a technique of getting across the UK coast when you came back.
Oh, yes. Coming back, another thing that I was very insistent on, I would never, never at night cross the English coast until I was fairly certain where I was. I'd lost my CO the week before. He had flown into the barrage of balloons at Harwich, and all were killed. Others had flown into the balloons at Hull and were all killed. But fortunately, later on in 1940, they produced I think they called it a darkie system, and you'd get a buzzing in the aircraft when you were flying towards balloons over England. And it was very disconcerting if you were in cloud or something and you heard this buzzing coming up, because you knew there were balloons somewhere around you. But sometimes it was a help because it stopped you flying into them.
What effects did the war have on you?
I don't think any effects at all, except that my back suffered since I crashed. But I suppose put it down to old age now. But I was fully mobile. As I say, I completed two tours, so it couldn't affect me very much.
But do you get nightmares about it?
I certainly do get nightmares, and I think anybody who flew in Bomber Command during the war must sense some reaction to it, the horror of what went on, seeing your friends killed or seeing them burnt to death.
Is it nightmares about the operations or about the losses?
I think mainly it's about the losses. One used to be, at least I'm talking for myself, I used to sweat at night and not sleep. But immediately I got in the cockpit and opened the engines, I had no fears whatsoever. And I'd come back, and I would be very nervous and fidgety. And then the next raid, I'd get in the aircraft, nervous and fidgety, and immediately I started the engines, taxied out. I wasn't frightened anymore. But the whole thing was, we were all frightened, we were terrified, but we were frightened to show that we were terrified. That's the best way I can put it.
Is that why you were so annoyed about that LMF case in Malta?
The LMF case in Malta, the sergeant I'm talking about had only done about four trips. And the whole point being that had he got away with it, I personally think he should have been shot, but had he got away with it, the morale would have gone. You see, you have to be absolutely ruthless over these things. A thing like that can spread like wildfire. And that was the only time I experienced it. The only interesting thing I didn't mention, which I think it's well worth recording. In, let me just look the date up. One thing I think's well worth mentioning, going back to when I was flying Handy Page Hamdens in 49 Squadron. On the 22nd of December 1939, Number 5 Group were detailed to assemble some 30-odd Hamdens, which was the main force of five group at that stage, and we were told that we had to fly to the Norwegian coast as the battleship Deutschland had been reported going up the coast. The raid was led by a wing commander, Wally Sheen, a splendid chap, who was CO of 49 Squadron, and I was detailed to fly as deputy leader of the formation underneath him. We took off from Scampton and flew to Norway, and then flew up the coast to look for the Deutschland. All 30-odd aircraft in sort of a wide formation. Having flown up many miles up the Norwegian coast, there was no Deutschland, and Sheen decided that we better fly back to England. Well, we flew back for some 3.5 hours, and I had as my navigator a naval commander on board who was going to pick out the Deutschland for us. Why we were not permitted to pick out the Deutschland, heaven knows, but however, this naval officer was on board. And we flew back towards England over very sort of overcast conditions, and suddenly I realized we were going to run out of petrol in about half an hour, and all we saw was sea. And Wally Sheen, the leader, was informed by radio that we were getting short of fuel, and there were 30-odd aircraft flying, all going to run out of petrol over the North Sea. And fortunately, at that stage, we saw a ship below us. Now, Sheen decided to break away and fly down to the ship and try with a lamp to get him to point the ship to point towards land. Now, what we didn't know at this stage, that the ship's crews were very ignorant in those days, signaled back to England, which was actually about 25 miles away. We didn't know this because we were flying in the overcast, that he was being attacked by 30 uncles. All the Spitfires on the coast were alerted, and some of the Hamdens, he didn't point the ship to land, he just, I think, pulled the poop down, and they went on traveling, but there we were. And Sheen then decided that we would fly on for another 10 minutes, and if we didn't see land, we would all fly back and land in the water and hope to God the ship would pick us up. But what we didn't know was the Spitfires had been alerted, and suddenly I saw land, and I had about 10 gallons of petrol left. That wasn't much, I know. And I saw land coming up, and it was Holy Island in Northumbria. And the chap behind me was flying, and as we were just going into land, he ran out of fuel, and he went straight into a church, and they were all killed. And what we didn't know was the other bunch of Hamdens had gone a bit north, and as they went in, they put their undercarriages down and fired the colours of the day, which was recognition. Spitfires took no notice of that. They waded into them and shot them down into the sea and killed them. I think three or four were shot down in the sea and killed. And I fortunately landed at a place called Acklington. And when we got there, we had to separate my CO, and you talk about arguments, and the CO of the Spitfire squadron, nearly shooting it out.